Tavira, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for the invitation to come back to Budapest today to talk about a particular area of interest in my university, the bit of open science, which is to do with publishing patterns and options for academic publishing in a research-intensive university like my own. So the title of the presentation is From Open Access to Open Scholarship. UCL Press is a model for the future of scholarly publishing. So UCL Press is our new institutional university press. It is an open access press. I'm the chief executive of the press, as well as being the university librarian and the person responsible for introducing open science principles and practice across the university. This is the launch of our press. We launched it 3 years ago on the 4th of June 2015 as the UK's first fully open access university press. Our launch author is Professor Lisa Jardine, sitting in the chair there, sadly no longer with us today, but Professor Jardine gave the most fantastic talk at the launch of the press about the importance of open access, particularly in arts, humanities and social sciences, which was Professor Jardine's particular interest. And that is was quite an interesting talk, because arts and humanities are often seen as outliers on the open access roadmap, as not being particularly interested in open access approaches, much more conservative, as our previous speaker has indicated, much more conservative about the approaches they make to publishing activity. Well, the press, as I'm going to say, and hopefully explain in the next 20-25 minutes, the press belies that notion that arts and humanities have no connection with open access, and open access is something for the scientists, for biomedicine, for engineering, for computer science, for biochemistry, and nothing to do with arts and humanities. The press shows that that's simply an urban myth, that simply isn't true. So let me explain why. When I started the press, one of the first things I did was to go around and talk to all the 11 schools. So the UCL is a research-intensive university divided into 11 academic schools. We have about 75 academic departments in those schools at faculty level. And these were some of the points that came out in the discussion with academics about the benefits of starting a university press. Let me just concentrate on two or three of them. So the one in the middle column and the middle box in the middle column, one of the benefits of starting an open access university press was its global impact, because outputs would reach regions which, geographical reasons, regions of the world in which research is unavailable or unaffordable. So that sounds rather like the beer advert: this beer reaches the parts that other beers cannot reach. It was a kind of play on words of that idea, that open access actually breaks down barriers and opens up opportunities for making your research globally relevant. And one of the other points that I point out is the middle box in the third column, when I asked academics, well, what would be the main benefit to you if we introduce an open access press? Why would you support it? And one of the most common answers was they want their research to be widely read. And they thought that open access, through breaking down barriers, was a way of giving them, as authors, credit for their work and recognition for the impact that their work was making. So there are a collection of reasons here about why open access presses, open access publishing were a good thing. And 4 years later, here are some facts about what we've achieved through constructing the press in my university. We first launched in June 2015, and we work with a staff of six in the press. Now, they're all publishers, they're not librarians. Although the press is a department of the library, I've included it as a library department because it's easier to, it's easier to manage that way, since I'm the university librarian, and also because they share a lot of the library infrastructure in terms of the repository, which we use to store the outputs, the outreach team that goes out to academic departments, and the finance team that helps with the finances. So there's a lot of shared infrastructure, soft infrastructure, hard technical infrastructures, and placing them in the library was a good way of creating those sharing opportunities. So they are publishers, and they've adopted very traditional, in some senses, very traditional ways of copy editing, commissioning books, going through the peer review process. We have a very strict method of, or several methods of peer review, which I'll come on to describe. So we've adopted, as far as possible, in an open access environment, traditional values of publishing to maintain the quality of the outputs. But what is different? And this is what has been provided by the library team, by myself and my colleagues who work on the library side, and who have input into the development of the press. The library has provided the open access wrapper and the understanding of what open access means in an academic context. So the publishers and the librarians who are bringing open access to the table meet in the middle. And that's the success of the press, that it is a meeting of two different cultures in a shared environment with a shared vision and shared goals. And that's, in my view, that's why it has worked so well. And these are the results so far. We published books. So I'm talking now mainly about research monographs. I'll come on and talk about journals in a minute. But we started with publishing research monographs. We published about 50 books so far. And we one of our metrics is download figures for downloads for those books. And we have 1.4 million downloads for these 50 books in 229 countries and territories around the world. So practically every country in the world has experienced a download of a UCL Press title. We have one download in the Vatican City, so His Holiness must have read something that we published. I'd have to check to see what the title was. We have 15 downloads in North Korea, and it's the only contact that my university has with North Korea. It's the download of our academic titles in that country. And we have a number of downloads from Hungary. So would anybody like to guess how many Hungarian downloads we've had? How many people have downloaded UCL Press titles in Hungary? Would you guess? 100? 200? Higher, lower? Higher? It's 4,500, actually. 4,600 downloads from the geographical area of Hungary of these 50 UCL Press titles that are at the moment all in English. There's not that we don't restrict ourselves to English language publishing. It just so happens that the first 50 books are in English. And we have about 100,000 downloads every month added to the download figure. And we're just about to pass, probably when I get back to UCL by the end of the month, by November, we're projecting our 1.5 million downloads. We'll have got to 1.5 million downloads. This is what the structure of the press looks like, and our organisational chart there is in the middle of the screen. You see me as Pro Vice Provost at the top, as the chief executive. of the press, and then my colleague Martin is our director of services in the library, and he manages the staff on a day-to-day basis. So the top two boxes are library posts established in the library, but all the other posts, from head of publishing in the purple box and the layers underneath, are all press publishers based in the press office. So Lara Spiker is our head of publishing, and all our other publishing colleagues are in managing editors for books or commissioning editors for journals. And they all come, including Lara herself, from commercial publishing backgrounds. They all bring those experiences and those values to the press so that we don't lose their knowledge and their insight by making it a purely library operation. This is the typical output of a UCL press publishing activity. This is one of our books, The Spectral Arctic, and the record comes from our catalogue of books. You see the most downloaded version, it will be the PDF version, which sits in UCL repository, UCL Discovery, which is our open access repository run by the library, which the press is using as the storage layer. And when you download the title, you're downloading the PDF version from the repository. You can buy paper copy, so you can buy a hardback version or you can buy a paperback version if you want to have paper. And we don't print runs. We have a print on we plugged in a print on demand service, so that would be a transaction between the reader and the third party supplier who's supplying print on demand services, and it would be a credit card transaction over the web if they want to order a paper version. You see, on the next slide actually, here, this is our publisher's catalogue in the big picture, and then the paper copy. These are the collection of UCL Press paper titles in my office, where we display them all for visitors to see. This is our most downloaded book. It's by Danny Miller, who is Professor of Anthropology in UCL. And he won a European Research Council grant to study the impact of social media in different areas of the world. And in fact, he's produced a series of 10 books. He's publishing them all with UCL Press because he wanted the outputs to be open access. But this is his most downloaded title, How the World Changed Social Media, and is a general study of the impact of social media on society and how society has changed the way that social media is used and the impact of social media in day-to-day life. And you see the download figures here on the bottom of the screen in red. There are some print sales, so 76 people wanted to buy a paper copy, but 250,000 downloads for this one title. In a conventional research monograph publishing model, where you're selling books over the bookshop counter, that's the prevailing model for research monographs. If you sold 400 copies, you'd say that was a really good result. The market for research monographs is extremely small, partly because there is no general digital version of the title available from any commercial outlets, and partly because the cost of purchasing is so high. Students and the general reader just won't afford £40 or £50 for a title. So the market is set against mass usage. There are too many barriers. These barriers are broken down in an open access environment where the default is digital. Open access, so most of these books will have a CC BY license attached to them. We do allow more restrictive versions of CC BY if the author wants to choose a more restrictive version. CC BY NC, for example, would be chosen by some authors, but most of them were perfectly happy with a CC BY license being attached. So this book here, How the World Changed Social Media, is a research monograph. We're also trying to move into the textbook market as well, and we started a series of textbook publications, and this is our first textbook. It's from our master's course on burns and plastic surgery, which is the course is run from one of our teaching hospitals in the Royal Free Hospital, which is one of the teaching hospitals. We send our medical students on clinical placement. And Deepak Kalaska is one of our academics who also holds a clinical position in the hospital. And this is Deepak actually in the middle of the in the middle of the picture. So it's a textbook from a master's course, 1 year master's course, and you can see the statistics. It is doing quite well on the print sales, 175 copies sold, but nearly 45,000 downloads. And I asked Deepak, now why did you want to publish with UCL Press? You could have published this textbook with any publisher anywhere in the world. I'm sure you didn't have to come to UCL Press. Why did you want to? Why did you choose open access? And why did you choose UCL Press as your publisher of choice? And I asked him this at the launch party, actually, when we launched this textbook. And his answer was, I don't know many open access publishers, but I do know UCL and UCL Press, so that's why I chose you. And why did I choose open access? I chose open access because I want the insights from my team, which is a world-leading team in this particular area of burns and plastic surgery. I want these insights and these techniques to be available to a global audience in the developing world who wouldn't be able to buy, wouldn't be able to afford to buy the paper copy. So my aim is not to make money from publishing. This is Deepak speaking. My aim is not to make money, it's to make a contribution and to add value. And open access publishing does that in a way that the commercial publishing model for monographs and textbooks may well not. We also publish journals, so we have eight journals here, which are largely society journals. Well, some of them are society journals, so the Journal of the Sylvia Townsend Warner Society is a literary journal in literary studies. But some of them are new journals created by our some of our more research-intensive departments. So the first one, Architecture MPS, is created by the Bartlett School of Architecture in UCL at their instigation. And the Bartlett is probably the most important and prestigious school of architecture in Europe in terms of its in terms of its impact. And they chose open access publishing through our journal platform because they wanted to make a difference to the way that the research outputs from the school were used. We also use an overlay journal system for hosted journals. These are mainly student journals produced by student societies. So we have eight student journals, and we're using an in-house overlay journal system where the content sits in UCL Discovery, which is the open access repository run by the library. And there is an editorial board made up of academics and mainly postgraduate students in a particular academic departments who select content that they've placed in the repository to form issues of a journal. And it's a way of introducing students to academic publishing. And some of our students actually go on to become publishers in their own right as a result of the experience of working in an overlay journal context. So these are student journals, this set of eight journals here, and these are academic research journals, and two different types of journals produced by the press. And we're just about to launch in January next year our new mega journal platform, which we believe to be the future of journal publishing. We think that research monographs have been cracked by the UCL Press model, the download statistics, the fact that we have 2 years' worth of books submitted, proposals for books submitted by academics in UCL and outside UCL, on the list. So we have 2 years worth of publishing already signed up or going through the process of being signed up with the press. So we have a guaranteed market for book publishing. So we think we've cracked the book, the research monograph a challenge. What we want to do next is produce a new platform for journals to replace the traditional model of journal publishing, where the academic community wants to work in a mega journal environment. So this mega journal platform will be a subject-based platform, and then the subject we started with that we'll be launching this first UCL mega journal in is environmental studies. So it'll be interdisciplinary and cross-disciplinary. The theme is environmental studies. It will bring in articles from areas, academic areas like geography, earth sciences, medicine, looking at the health challenges of poor environments, politics and economics because of policy issues around the environment. And this will be an opportunity for all this cross-disciplinary work to be brought together on one platform. The model will be, as the diagram shows, very rapid publication in OA of the paper once it goes through certain basic checks by the academic editorial board. So it will be available as a green OA output soon after submission. It will then go through full academic peer review from selected peer reviewers, so nominated peer reviewers, nominated by the editorial board, and also an open peer review process where we invite members of the community to submit their reviews as well. All these reviews will be published alongside the green OA version, again in UCL Discovery, in the institutional repository. And then it will be passed through to the production team who will produce the final copy-edited version with links to the green version and the peer review reports on the UCL Discovery platform. And the final copy-edited, formatted text will appear on the Mega Journal platform with links between the two. And also links to the UCL Research Data Repository, where you'll be able to look at the data, the research data that underpins the conclusions that are the basis of the articles that are appearing on the Mega Journal platform. And we want to use this model as a test for the Mega Journal concept, to see which academic communities in the academy are comfortable in about working in this sort of way, with this sort of workflow, and then cascade the model around to other academic areas in due course. We do offer press, consultancy, and publishing services. If you as a university don't want to invest in all the infrastructure that we have done in UCL with the staff and with the technical platforms, but do want to start an open access publishing activity, we will act as your publisher on your behalf. All the outputs will be branded as the outputs of your university. The UCL Press logo won't appear on any of them. It will be your university logo and your university name that appears on those outputs. But the UCL Press will be working behind the scenes to be the engine to drive the publishing activity. And we have just signed our first contract with a university who've bought our publishing services, and this is Dublin City University in the Republic of Ireland. So they have become Ireland's first open access university press using publishing services, technical and copy editing services that UCL Press is providing, but where all the academic activity and all the academic content comes from Dublin and obviously not from London or from the University Press, in UCL Press in London. So it is a partnership between two universities where UCL is helping other universities by setting up their own academic publishing activities to have the same benefits and same types of outcomes that we've seen be the product of UCL Press activity in the last 3 years. So in conclusion, I'd say that my university, we often see open access as a problem. We've been talking about Plan S earlier today, and I'm sure we'll talk about, or at least I hope we will talk about Plan S in the panel session later on this afternoon, when we did have a panel session in Belgrade earlier this week. That was the single most lively discussion between academics and librarians and researchers in the room about the impact of Plan S. And so open access, as I say in my first bullet here in conclusion, open access is often seen as a problem. In my university, we don't see it as a problem. We see it as an opportunity to change things, to do things differently, with better benefits to a wider community as a result of changing the working practices. So open access isn't a threat. It doesn't destroy things. It creates new opportunities if you treat it in that way. Open access publishing can be transformative. It can be innovative. I think UCL Press shows it can be both those things. And it is also disruptive because it does change the way that things happen. My university, UCL, is the third oldest university in England. We were founded in 1826 after Oxford and Cambridge. And we were founded deliberately to be disruptive. That's what our founders wanted us to be. They wanted to change the cosy, inward-looking curriculum that Oxford and Cambridge then provided. I'm a Cambridge graduate. They don't offer that kind of curriculum now. But they did in the 19th century. UCL was about making a difference, about disruptive change. And these are the values we've brought into the press, because we think we can carry on making a disruptive but positive change in the 21st century. It means the library can be a publisher, so you are a creator of knowledge, not simply a conserver or a cataloguer of knowledge. You're actually doing something more active and creative. You're creating new knowledge and new wisdom, which can be shared by the communities that are downloading your copy. So it is, as a byproduct of the open science debate, a new role for the library in terms of research and learning agendas. Thank you very much for hosting the Focus on Open Science workshop here in Budapest today. This is our 2018 series. We're already planning the series for 2019. If you'd like to be included in the series for 2019, now's the time to say so, because we have so many applications, we're having to close the lists early. We'll be closing the list at Christmas so we can plan the series. But thank you very much for listening, and if you have any questions now or in the panel session, I'd be very happy to answer them.
Thank you very much, Paul. We are actually having about eight minutes. We are running ahead the agenda with 8 minutes. So if there are any questions now, please do raise your hand. There are also some obvious questions for you on Slido. Paul, there are some questions on Slido. We are about now probably 7 minutes.
Okay.
Would you like to pick one, or?
You pick one for me.
I would pick the second on the list here. Can you tell the influence of open access availability on print
sales?
Yes, I
can. Yes, thanks.
Because it's not an obvious answer. This is why I picked that.
Okay. So what impact does open access have on print sales? Well, I shared some statistics on print sales in the slides. Let's go back and have a look. So, I'll choose one of the best examples. This is Danny Miller's book on social media. There is a myth in the open access world, and I don't really know how it has started, but there is a myth that if you have one copy of a book available digitally, you will not make any sales. So all the sales revenue that you as a publisher would expect to make will disappear because you've made one copy available digitally. And I'm suggesting the stats already from UCL Press show that that is an urban myth. that simply is not true, because look at these stats, these two books, and these are typical kind of stats. We're getting sales, we're getting sales for all these books. This one, because it's a textbook, I think this is why the figure for print sales is larger. Here it's a research monograph. People prefer to look at the downloaded PDF, so I think the print sales are, that's why the print sales are smaller. But if I think of the list, I get stats every month for downloads and for print sales for all our books, because we're trying to measure impact. Every book, I would say, the average, I did work out last month what the average number of sales was per title across the UCL list. It was coming out at around 140 sales of print copies per title. Now, as I said during the talk, that's quite a good outcome in a conventional publishing market. 400 copies, sales of 400 copies, would be seen as an extremely good outcome and quite rare, to be honest, unless it's a really stellar author and a stellar title. You won't make 400 sales because the market won't bear that level of demand because of the barriers that I mentioned. It's much more common to have sales of around 200, 150, 200. So on that basis, these sales figures here are more than respectable because they are. You can equate them with the kinds of sales figures you would expect to get using a conventional business model. Now, why does the university think these figures are wonderful? Well, the reason is in this slide here, because if you talk to the Vice Chancellor and his deans, they're not so worried. It's a different set of values, of course, because we're an academic university publisher. They're not worried so much about making money and about making sales. So while we measure sales, that's not the most important thing for the university. The most important thing is this figure in the top right-hand corner, the number of countries and territories in which UCL research is used and where it is being used to dictate policy decisions by decision makers in those countries. Because the importance of having an open access university press is not to make money, it's to add academic value to society and to decisions that society is making. And for a university, that's more valuable than making a couple of hundred pounds on print sales. That justifies why universities exist in this false news society where a judgment and expertise are not valued because we prefer social media and emotional reactions to news or to events. Societies, certainly in my country, in the UK, we feel that universities need to reconnect with society to prove their value, to prove that they make a difference. Open access publishing, through being an open access university press, is a really brilliant way of doing that because you're opening up your research to communities that wouldn't normally have access to it or wouldn't read it. And you're having tremendous impact as a result. So the metric is not print sales for a university vice chancellor. The metric is engagement with society, and this download figure is why UCL will fund the press and its infrastructure, because it shows that UCL is making a difference in countries like North Korea and other developing countries where normally we would have no contact at all, because knowledge is universal and open access means all those barriers to accessing UCL's knowledge have been removed.
Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed the presentation, and please join me in giving a round of applause to Dr. Paul Harris for his presentation today.